And Radio Derb is on the air. Willkommen, bienvenue, irthate, welcome. This is your multilingually genial host, John Derbyshire, broadcasting to you from our hideaway island in the wine-dark Aegean. I hear you've been enduring some appalling weather over there in the States. My condolences to those who've been flooded out, burned out, lost power, or otherwise been deprived of the comforts of home. If it's any consolation, though the weather here is balmy, we are in an earthquake zone. Just the other morning, in fact, I overheard one of the girls say that she could swear she'd felt the earth move, though I didn't catch the precise context. But never mind that. Rain or shine, earthquake or volcanic eruption, the show must go on.
Let's go on with the show.
Let's see what's been happening this week. Anytime I'm feeling low, thanks to the internet, I can log on to one of the broadsheet newspapers or one of the TV news channels and have a long, cynical chuckle at the contortions their liberal reporters go through when presenting stories related to diversity. Here, for example, is the July 5th New York Times. Front page story below the fold. Headline: For neighborhood in flux, tensions surface at a revived city pool. I can do some quick decoding. Decoding, I mean, out of liberal newspeak into traditional English. I can do some decoding right there with the headline. In a story about New York City, which this obviously is, the phrase neighborhood in flux means that a city neighborhood is being gentrified. The former inhabitants, working-class white ethnics, Hispanics, which in this context means Puerto Ricans and Dominicans, or underclass blacks, are all being displaced by mostly white yuppies. It's happening all over, not just in New York. America's inner cities are being reclaimed by the upper middle classes. Again, mostly non-Hispanic white, with the merest seasoning of buppies, that's black yuppies, and, huppies. Not to be confused with hippies, which is a different thing. Likewise, the phrase tensions surface almost always means race trouble. So it proves in this case. The New York Times story concerns McCarran Park in Brooklyn. If you want to check it out, bring up Google Maps for Midtown Manhattan. Draw an imaginary line from west to east along 14th Street and extend the line across the river into Brooklyn and then just keep going three or four blocks and there you are, McCarran Park. The park's pretty big, with ball fields, a quarter-mile running track, and a big pool, the McCarran Park Pool. The pool was built back in the public works boom during the Depression days. Then, after sliding into disrepair, says the Times, I wonder what the story is behind that, the pool was emptied and the area was closed in 1984. Well, last week, they reopened it after a $50 million renovation. And on that very first day, there was race trouble. Oops, sorry, I mean, tensions surfaced. This was because the partial gentrification of the neighbourhood left the pool in range of some public housing projects populated by blacks and Hispanics. Oops again, sorry again, I mean on account of the neighbourhood being in flux. So, here are these media liberals walking on eggshells through their narratives. Longish quote from the New York Times, quote, inside the pool on Friday, that's Friday, June 29th, teenagers scuffled with a lifeguard who had ordered them to stop doing backflips, and the pool closed an hour early. On Monday, two police officers were injured by swimmers who also persisted in doing backflips. Three men were arrested and charged with assault in the second degree, inciting to riot, criminal nuisance, and menacing. More security has been apparent in recent days. End quote. The more downmarket New York Post, which is somewhat franker about these things, had more to say about that Friday scuffle. It was, said the Post, quote, a vicious brawl. Further quote, an unruly crowd of teens started the melee at about 6:15 p.m. when they attacked guards trying to stop them doing dangerous backflips into the water, end quote. The Post quoted some tweets that made it sound even worse. Quote, full riot. And, quote, lifeguard assaulted, nearly drowned by group of kids. Reporting on the Monday disturbances, the Post told us that, quote, a 20-year-old hood, punched a cop in the face and was busted for assault, police said. His two pals, 17 and 18, were cuffed for disorderly conduct. It was the New York Times story that got us closest to a description of the perps, though. Quote, two of the men arrested came from a public housing complex, the Marcy Houses, on the border of Williamsburg and Bedford-Stuyvesant. The other lives across the street from the pool. Latest news is that the city's police department will, from now on, have plainclothes officers at the pool. Now look, the diversity nonsense is what it is, and the problems arising from it are what they are. All I want to know is, why can't we talk frankly and honestly about it? Why all this tiptoeing around by journalists who are supposed to report cold facts? Look at those newspaper stories I quoted. Teenagers. Three men. A crowd of teens. A group of kids. A 20-year-old hood. And his two pals. Why not accomplices? And then we're back to men. And what happened at the pool? Was it a scuffle? A vicious brawl? A melee? A full riot? Who knows? Not the newspaper readers of New York, either tabloid or broadsheet. It's like we've gone so deep into the sensitivity zone, we've lost our language for describing events like this. What's a hood? Let's try the dictionary. Hang on. Must be this. Hood. Noun. Slang. A hoodlum. When I look up hoodlum, though, it says gangster, which I take to mean someone involved in organised crime. I somehow doubt that the 20-year-old guy who punched a cop in the face at McCarran Park Pool on Monday, I somehow doubt that he wears shiny suits and pinky rings. Linguistically, this whole zone is a mess. It's a mess because we're afraid to speak honestly about what's going on. When people are afraid to speak honestly, it's because there are true facts in the world that they'd prefer not to face. True facts like these. For white yuppies from gentrified neighbourhoods, a free public swimming pool is a place to swim a little, sunbathe a little, have fun with the kids a little if you're married, flirt a little if you're not, and catch up on some reading. For young blacks and Hispanics from the projects, it's a place to show off, to status challenge other young toughs, to get in fights and to defy authority. The two things don't mix. Whoever thought they would, whoever spent $50 million to bring this pool back to commission with open admission for all who'd show up, whoever did that is an idiot. An idiot whose brain has been addled by the kind of dishonest, reality-defying linguistic malpractice on display in the New York newspapers this week. If you thought the Federal Department of Justice could not get any crazier, try this. The police department of the city of Corpus Christi, Texas, has fitness standards for people who want to be police officers. Applicants must complete a 300-meter run, a 1.5-mile run. That doesn't make sense. Why 300 meters and then 1.5 miles? Shouldn't it be 1.5 kilometers or 300 yards? Applicants must complete a 300-meter run, a 1.5-mile run, and sessions of pull-ups and sit-ups. Well, in the years 2005 to 2009, only 19% of female applicants passed this test, compared to 63% of men. Gosh, why would that be? I have no clue. What does the US Department of Justice say? Discrimination, that's what. In 2011, responding to complaints from female applicants who'd failed the test, Corpus Christi PD lowered the standards. As a result, 33% of women passed the test, along with 82% of men. The DOJ was not satisfied. You're still discriminating, they said. I'm not making this up. The DOJ is now suing Corpus Christi for violating the civil rights of rejected female applicants. Thomas Perez, Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division in the Justice Department, sang the following to the tune of Turkey in the Straw while juggling three different kinds of fruit. Quote, "The Justice Department is looking forward to working with the city to resolve this matter in a way that eliminates the use of the unlawful physical ability test and gives women who were screened out of the process an opportunity to become Corpus Christi police officers." I don't know about you, gentle listener, but I say this is some kind of turning point. The administration has jumped the shark, and its actions are now indisputably insane. Prove me wrong. There has been much wailing and gnashing of teeth among conservatives over Chief Justice John Roberts' decision in the Obamacare case. The wailing and gnashing has been offset to some degree by a faction of conservatives finding silver linings of various kinds. In the lead here was George Will, hailing the decision for its firm statement of limitations on the Commerce Clause. Other upbeat conservatives said the court's decision would be a vote winner for Mitt Romney, concentrating the electorate's minds on the fact that if they want to get rid of Obamacare, they'll have to do it through the ballot box. I agree with George Will. Congress has justified far too many power grabs via the Commerce Clause. It's time that particular tactic was scotched. I agree with the other guys too. The electorate voted in the people who gave us Obamacare. If they hate the thing now, let them vote those people out. Fundamentally, though, I think it's all just quibbling over inconsequentialities. Our current healthcare system is a bureaucratic extravaganza that costs us way more than people in any other nation pay, with not much to show in healthcare outcomes for all the extra money. In the mail today, a pretty average day mail-wise, I got two letters from my secondary healthcare insurer. One letter is 13 printed pages. The other is only 6. I have just filed both letters in my file box, in the box's thickest folder, the one for medical records and medical correspondence. I never read these letters. Nobody ever does. They're just some pro forma thing required of the insurance company by some regulation or other. Mrs. Derbyshire is a medical billing professional. That's her job, medical billing. She had to go to college to qualify for it. I used to take a look sometimes at her course materials. Nuclear physics would have been an easier choice of career. Obamacare will, of course, make the thing much worse. Why are we Americans stuck with this choice, a choice between lousy and worse? Basically because we have deceived ourselves into thinking that we are averse to socialism, so that fully socialised single-payer healthcare is unthinkable to us and unmarketable for our politicians. Other countries do fine with it, but we just can't bear the thought. It's self-deception, as I said. We're not averse to socialism. We're socialised up to our eyeballs. What are Medicare, Medicaid and CHIP, that's the Children's Health Insurance Programme, what are they, if not socialism? What's EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labour Act of 1986? Requiring practically all hospitals to provide care to anyone needing emergency treatment, regardless of citizenship, legal status or ability to pay. What's EMTALA if not socialism? What's Medicare Part D if not socialism? We love socialism, and we watch happily as presidents of every persuasion, liberal or conservative, sign it into law. EMTALA was signed into law by Ronald Reagan. Medicare Part D was signed into law by George W. Bush. The American people love socialism just as much as the people of any other advanced country do. We just don't want to admit it. Who are we kidding? That's not a rhetorical question. We're kidding ourselves, big time. One of my readers posted a comment to something I wrote that's stuck in my mind. If you look around the world, says this reader, at the most comfortable, prosperous, peaceful and happiest countries, what drives American conservatives crazy is that they're all socialist. What drives liberals crazy is that they're all white. I'd want to add a lot of qualifications to that. For example, those countries are all small, and possibilities and capabilities are different for small countries than for big ones. They're not all white either. Last time I checked, Japanese don't count as white. If you want to talk socialism, though, the Japanese are less socialist than we are. Their central government spends only 37% of the nation's GDP. Ours spends 39%, and that's not even to mention state and local expenditures. On the same yardstick, the following other countries are less socialist than we are. Latvia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Australia, Russia, Switzerland, South Korea, Uruguay, Taiwan, Singapore. Canada and Norway spend a tad more than us, around 40% of GDP. New Zealand's at 41%, but you get the picture. On the dollar figures of government expenditure, the USA is no more hostile to socialism than those other nations. Like I said, we're kidding ourselves. The price of self-deception is very high, as it usually is in all spheres of life. Instead of a single-payer healthcare system with a minimal bureaucracy, supplemented by private arrangements with private insurance companies for those who want more and can afford it, instead of that, we have this vast Rube Goldberg contraption, this bureaucratic nightmare that sends me 20 pages of dead tree every couple of days, that employs thousands of people like my wife to sort it all out for the involved parties. Obamacare will make it worse, you may be sure of that. And it will get worse and worse until we eventually wake up and admit that other countries have had it right all along, and we've had it wrong. That's a painful thing for proud Americans to admit. But reality will have the last word. She always does. How about a little showbiz news for a change? Yes, this segment is about the Tom Cruise-Katie Holmes breakup. I have to tread very carefully here. Tom Cruise belongs to a certain religious denomination that I had better not name. That organisation has a reputation for massive lawsuits against anyone who steps on its foot in the subway. This denomination was founded 60 years ago by an unemployed writer of second-rate science fiction. The mid-20th century was the great age of pseudoscience, the age of the orgone box, of Dr. J.B. Rhine's telepathy experiments, of UFOs and Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision. Psychoanalysis was still going strong, with tremendous social and literary influence. Well, the aforementioned sci-fi author reached deep into these murky waters, pulled out a handful of mud, and shaped it into the aforementioned denomination. My best guess is that this religious denomination will not be around 2,000 years from now, but you never know. Anyway, Tom Cruise is a committed congregant. When he married Katie Holmes 5.5 years ago, she became one too. Their little girl Suri, currently aged 6, would presumably be inducted into the same denomination. You've heard of cradle Catholicism? Well, the little Suri was a cradle you-know-whatist. Therein seems to have lain the problem. Tom's denomination is awfully jealous of its adherents. Once in that thing, you don't easily get out. Hearing that her little girl was about to be sent off to a camp to be zombified in the faith, Katie pulled the plug. Next thing in the news, Katie's New York home was being staked out by guys with thick necks, photographing anyone who came in or out. Now, I see Katie's hired some goons of her own, so the whole strange business is turning into a goon fest. Moral of the story. If you're a dim-witted young actress looking to launch a movie career by marrying an established male star, choose a Muslim. It'll be easier on you in the long run. So, have physicists spotted the Higgs boson, or haven't they? Let me have a shot at explaining the Higgs boson. If you know anything about modern physics at all, you know about wave-particle duality. The wave side of that consists of wavy oscillations in a field. The electromagnetic field is the familiar one. The field propagated outward through space by an old-fashioned radio transmitter, or a flashlight. If you imagine yourself shrunk down to a dot and placed at some point in an electromagnetic field, with instruments in your hand to measure electric and magnetic force, you'd see the needles on the instruments go up and down, up and down. That's the wave going by. When you get deep into the mathematics of these fields, some of the equations are easier to interpret if you treat the energy of the field as bundled up into localized packets, called quanta. The quantum for the electromagnetic field is a little guy called the photon. When scientists first wrestled with wave-particle duality, they thought in terms of correspondence between the intensity of the field at some place and the probability of the photon being in that place. You still see popular explanations of fundamental physics couched in those terms. We now know that that way of thinking is naive. The actual relationship between the field interpretation of the mathematical equations and the particle interpretation is more subtle, with deep roots in advanced algebra and classical mechanics. The correct attitude to all this is to remember that the human brain evolved to cope with things on the everyday feet and inches scale, what one philosopher called medium-sized dry goods. We don't have the imaginative resources to make true mental models of what's going on at subatomic scales, except indirectly via math. Think of the mathematical equations as the real thing, and the talk about waves and particles as just approximate imaginative interpretations of reality. And of course, there are other kinds of fields in physics. The gravitational field is the other one that everybody knows about. And yes, there are gravity waves, although it takes a stupendous amount of energy to generate them. And yes, there's a particle called a graviton. Ditto, ditto. Now, how come matter has mass? You know, mass, that's inertia, resistance to being accelerated up from a standing start. How come matter has this property? It sure doesn't come from the electromagnetic field. The photon, we know, has no mass. Nor, believe it or not, does the hypothetical graviton, even though the gravitational field is intimately bound up with the masses of the bodies generating it. Compare the photon, which has no charge, even though it's all bound up with electromagnetism, which is fizzing with charge. Well, if there isn't something else out there, everything should, in theory, be travelling at the speed of light, which pretty much rules out normal matter. If all the particles making up your body, your house, your planet, if all those particles are moving at the speed of light, then normal everyday life is problematic. Well, there's yet another field called the Higgs field. This is the thing you need to get mass into the system. And just as the equations for the electromagnetic field can be read as implying a particle, the photon, so the equations of the Higgs field imply a very different particle, the Higgs boson. The particle, in our best current understanding, actually generates the Higgs field. Hence the joke that's been going round. Here's the joke. A Higgs boson shows up at the door of a Catholic church. Priest, can I help you? Higgs boson. No, pal, but I can help you. Priest, how is that? Higgs boson. Without me, you can't have mass. That joke doesn't work if you're an English Catholic. They pronounce mass as mass. Okay, I did my best there with the explanation. This week's news is that the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland has produced data, analysed over several months, which strongly suggests the Higgs boson has been spotted. physicists are celebrating all over. Peter Higgs himself, the guy that the wee beastie is named after, showed up in Geneva to join the fun. He's 83 years old, by the way. The thing that's been observed may not be a Higgs boson, but if it's not, that's even more exciting for physicists. The Higgs has been predicted by theory. If what's been spotted is a Higgs, the theory is confirmed. If it's not a Higgs, physics needs a whole new theory, which means years of employment for theoretical physicists cooking up a new theory. Different kinds of happiness, but happiness either way. Congratulations, guys. Oh, and some girls, too. July 4th came and went. Here on the island, we expatriates had a modest little celebration of our own, about which I'm afraid the less said the better. The thing is, it turned into a bit of a fiasco. The Greek authorities are highly strung right now, in part because of the ongoing financial crisis, and in part because of their awareness that, in the opinion of many Greeks, they should indeed be highly strung, and the higher the better. Hence our little firework display was mistaken for the gunfire of a coup, and it brought a boatload of Astunomia over from the mainland, all armed to the teeth, kicking down doors, yelling and frightening the goats. We calmed them down, gave them some ouzo and souvlaki, and explained the situation, and all was made well. Almost all. The head Astunomikos, the sergeant, I guess, took a rather strong fancy to my research assistant Brandy, and he wouldn't re-embark his men until Brandy had polished his nightstick for him. Over there in the States, I see, people celebrated the nation's birthday, or possibly Calvin Coolidge's birthday, or in a few cases, I suppose, the retreat from Gettysburg. People celebrated in customary fashion. In President Obama's case, customary fashion means lying through his teeth and spitting in the faces of patriotic citizens. Let me take those one at a time, starting with the lying through his teeth. The occasion here was a special citizenship ceremony held on the morning of the 4th in the East Room of the White House. 25 new citizens were sworn in at the ceremony, all of them active duty members of the military. The president used this occasion to do some politicking on behalf of the so-called Dream Act, which would grant permanent residence to several hundred thousand persons who were brought here illegally as children, and to a million or so more who can fake having been so brought. As Radio Derb explained at length 2 weeks ago, the standards of evidence required to become a Dream Act beneficiary are looser than the proverbial wizard's sleeve. Loose enough, in fact, that a person nudging 40, who jumped the border solo as a teenager and has spent half his time since in Guadalajara, should have no trouble qualifying for permanent residence. And that, of course, is what Obama and his party want. Practically all the Dream Act beneficiaries will be Hispanics, who vote heavily Democratic. What's not to like for Obama and his party? So, here come the lies through the teeth. Quote from Obama at the citizenship ceremony, quote, "Just as we remain a nation of laws, we have to remain a nation of immigrants," end quote. The first part of that isn't so much lies as hypocrisy, from a president who has, even more conspicuously than his predecessor, done everything in his power to thwart the enforcement of our nation's laws on immigration and settlement. The second part is an actual falsehood, We do not have to remain a nation of immigrants. We could cease to be a nation of immigrants tomorrow by act of Congress, securing the borders, properly monitoring foreign residents, and cutting down severely on legal immigration. It's absurd to be bringing in a million foreigners a year for settlement when 25 million citizens can't find work. We had lower levels of immigration for years before the 1965 Immigration Act, and the country was just fine, with the economy and social conditions improving faster than they ever have before or since. What was the other thing I said? Oh yes, spitting in the faces of patriotic citizens. Citizens like my son, for example, a high school senior next year and hoping to join the US military right after graduation. But now here are 25 people at the president's ceremony who are serving in the military without being citizens. They're not outliers either. 29,000 non-citizens currently wear the uniforms of the United States military. Why? Shouldn't military service be a privilege for citizens only? Suppose my son shows up at the recruiting office next summer, but gets turned away because the military has all the recruits it needs, including those 29,000 non-citizens. Not for the first time, I find myself wondering why I bothered to go to the trouble and expense of acquiring US citizenship. What exactly was the point, if all the goodies are for non-citizens? That's all I have time for, ladies and gents, I'm afraid. A belated happy 4th of July to all. Now let's try a little mind force. Find a quiet place, close your eyes, concentrate hard, and channel Mitt Romney. You ready? Governor, please, choose Senator Rand Paul for your running mate. Rand Paul. Rand Paul.